This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
So, Herb, you've got a film you're doing. I know it's the day after Father's Day, but you've got a documentary on Father's Day. Why?
Well, Phil, Father's Day is a day that perhaps is the most painful of all holidays, and I didn't want to begin doing any press on this until after Father's Day, because it's, I suppose it would have been seen as sort of raining on some people's parades.
What is it do you find about Father's Day that is disingenuous? Because the film, I know, interviews fathers, you say, that have been abandoned.
Fathers, Phil, are not seen in the same sentimental light as mothers. Fathers are underappreciated, it is my opinion. Fathers are the ones who, I suppose, the children tiptoe around a little bit. It's not the great experience I suppose some young fathers think it will be. This being the day after, I think the reality of that has hit home, I think, with a lot of your listeners.
So your documentary sort of tells these stories of fathers abandoned by their kids or devoting themselves to their mothers. And
That's correct. And we tell a lot of interesting stories in the film. In fact, my own story, I think, is compelling in that it mirrors many of the men who we spoke with.
Well, you haven't spoken to your own kids in a long time. Is that true?
It is close to 7 years now, yes.
Why is that?
Well, the mistakes I've made with my children, with my family, I've owned up to the mistakes that I have made. and I've paid for my mistakes. And I think because of that, my children owe me whatever forgiveness children owe their parents. And they need to know. You see, Phil, there's no rule book for being a good parent. Every parent listening right now can relate to that. You do the best you can.
Do you know why your kids have stopped talking to you? Was there one reason?
Well, there were a lot of reasons, I suppose. I might have been too strict. I worked a lot. I was away from home a lot. And their mother died when they were young. And I know without question this traumatized them. And they were there when it happened, as I was. And it was a terrible day for us. And also...
Well, tell me what their mother died when they were, you guys were there. Tell me what happened. It figures into why they won't speak to you, perhaps. Do you suppose, or do they somehow blame you?
Well, I've got to believe they do. I'm sure that they do, but no one gives you a rule book. And that's the most important thing about being a parent. No one gives you a rule book. No one tells you the rules. So you're working blind. And certainly you can't expect...
Well, what happened with their mother?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. We were traveling north with the kids over the grapevine. This was about 7 years ago.
And for people, just to interrupt you, Herb, who don't know, that the Grapevine, that's a part of Interstate 5 through North L.A. County.
We were heading north, yes. And my wife, whose name was Diane, and she was upset that day. We were on a family outing, and I wanted so much for us to have a good time. And the children were in the car.
But how many kids do you have?
Well, I've got three. Paul, Kim, and James. Paul, Kim, and James. And she was angry over a party we'd been at. And there had been a young lady from our art department who was following me around. And my wife was a jealous woman, so she was angry about this. But she picked the wrong time to bring it up. And I simply told her, Diane, the children and I want to have a good vacation together. And if you don't, why don't you just leave? And I good-naturedly leaned over her. And I opened the car door. And the next thing I know, I could see myself. I don't know how it happened, but I found myself... I saw myself suddenly just pushing her out of the car, and of course it was almost funny when you stop to think of what I said to her.
My God, you pushed your wife.
Well, in a way,
you killed your wife, is what you're saying.
Well, there's no rule book.
No, but you pushed your wife out of a moving car. Is that right?
Well, let's hold on for a minute. You say I killed her.
You killed your wife, and that's what traumatized your kid. That's why they don't talk to you. Correct.
And I was incarcerated for 6 years at the state prison in Avenal, and I've made my amends, and I've made my amends to my children, and I've been through all of this. And what I'm on your show to talk about is my documentary on how fathers, for the most part, are treated poorly by the children, simply because there is no rule book. There's no guidebook on how to raise children. This is...
Well, wait, so the kids were all right with this? Why did you push your wife out of the car?
I don't know. The prison doctor told me I had an anger management problem. I've taken some seminars. He told me, Herb, you need to understand that some people are going to be insensitive, and anger is not the way to deal with it.
All right, hold on for a minute. Because if your kids haven't spoken to you in 7 years, from the time you pushed their mother out of a moving car, are the kids clear on all of this?
I think so.
Do they understand? Do they forgive?
Well, they knew their mother as well as I did. One thing that they knew about their mother and that I knew about her, and it was difficult to deal with, was she didn't know how to just be quiet. I used to say to her, Diane, just be quiet. And she'd go on and on and on. I saw this house. We have to move. My father and mother are coming to visit. And of course, she knew that I didn't enjoy that. And so I...
You did 6 years where?
Avenal.
Is that a state prison?
Yes, it is.
So you all right. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show. My guest is Herb Sewell. His documentary on fathers and how they've been abandoned by their kids. How fathers are the most misunderstood and mistreated of the two parents. And in your film, you deal with why you think that is. The question, though, as I move through this interview with you, Mr. Sewell, is... Do you see a connection? Your children haven't spoken to you in 6 years.
No, they haven't. But you have to understand, and we're getting far away from the point. The point is, children are bonded with their mothers from the time they're born. And it takes an awful lot for them to bond with their fathers. And if you are working a lot, and I was working very, very different. I was working as assistant director and director on a couple of projects. And so my children, as a result, I don't think were encouraged by their mother to bond with me. And
yeah, but in the 6 years they haven't spoken to you, you pushed their mother out of a car, and they haven't, out of a moving car?
Look, again, we're far afield of why I came on your...
Well, you were on the grapevine on Interstate 5, and she you reached over...
She was going on and on and on about this young lady who had paid attention to me at a party. And I said, if you don't like it, why don't you leave? And I leaned over, and I opened the door, and I pushed her out. But, as I told the judge, and as two psychiatrists attributed, I wasn't... It's almost as if she... caused me to push her out because...
Why? Because she was talking to you about some...
She wouldn't be quiet. Diane never knew how to be quiet. What my fear is that you are not hearing me about...
Well, I'm just putting two and two together, and if it's coming out five, let me know. Your kids haven't talked to you in 7 years from the time you pushed their mother out of a moving car.
Well, I don't know if that was the date, no. No, I don't know if that was. I'll tell you when it happened. They moved. They talked to me after they. If you're asking me, did they talk to me when their mother died? Yes, of course they did. They stopped talking to me after they moved in with their grandparents, Diane's parents. Now, this is a woman, my mother-in-law, who, if you want to know where Diane learned how to not be able to just be quiet, it was from her mother. This is a woman, I don't even call her...
All right, so you've got some issues with your mother-in-law. You think that she unfairly influenced the kids?
Oh, without question. And this is what I'm talking about. There is no rule book to be a father. There is no...
No, there isn't a rule book to be a father or a parent. But maybe the first thing that you don't want to do is push your wife out of a moving car.
Well, Phil, there's an old saying... if my uncle had wheels and pedals, it'd be a horseshoe. If there's an awful lot of things that we go on, sort of a hypothetical way of going about life. I go about life the way it is. My children are ungrateful, as many children are, for the many things that I've done for them. And I've done a great deal of work with Dr. Finneman, the prison doctor. 6 years of incredible soul-searching therapy, my children still treat me with disrespect. This can only be one reason. I think it's the influence that was their mothers and then finally their grandmother. And so my film points that out.
And who do you blame for all of the disrespect that kids heap on their fathers?
Well, the obvious person to blame is the mother. The mother does not want to relinquish control of the children. And as a result, the father is blamed, and therefore the father. That's why Father's Day was for me and for many millions of American men so very unfulfilling. And that my children would not call me.
But I have to mention the fact that you pushed their mother...
Well, you can mention it...
No, you pushed their mother out of a moving car at about, I don't know how fast you must have been going, but it couldn't have been very slow.
Well, you're going up the interstate grapevine. You have to understand that a lot of these people are on your tail. So you're doing probably through that area, as you're coming off the grapevine, probably approaching 85, 90 miles an hour. But I don't want you to keep focusing on Diane... forcing me really to push her out of that car that day. Focus instead on the damage she did before in my relationship with my children.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. You heard the man's story. That's Herb Sewell. He's a documentary filmmaker. His new film is coming out on fathers and why they're mistreated by their kids. Why so many fathers are abandoned by kids. Why so many fathers don't have the same relationship with their children that perhaps their wives or the mothers of the children have. His kids haven't spoken to him in 6 years. Now, the kids are living with their grandparents because apparently Mr. Sewell got into some kind of an altercation with his wife and pushed her out of a moving car on the interstate. The kids were there that day, saw that, and they haven't spoken to him almost from that date. He doesn't see a connection. I personally think I see a connection. You might ask him, Janice, if he's really wants to continue with this conversation, because I'm fully not quite getting where he's coming from, although he's blaming his wife for the miscommunication he has with his kids. 1-800-449-8686. Yes, I asked him how fast they were going. My producer's asked, did you ask how fast they were going? He said close to 90 miles an hour. That's a gruesome, horrible thing. How come fathers aren't respected by their kids? 1-800-449-8686. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. He's still Jenny on the block. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Okay, we on? I'm sorry, I was just talking to Mr. Sewell off the air. Herb, you there? So we had a problem with the connection. Herb, you there?
I'm right here, Phil, yes.
All right, what we're talking about here is the documentary they've come out with about fathers and how they are not treated by their mothers. By their wives.
Well, it's funny you made that Freudian slip because in a lot of ways husbands are treated by their wives as if they're little boys. So it's not too far afield, that Freudian slip.
Well, whether it's a Freudian slip or not, they're not treated by their wives fairly. So the kids are ostracized. Fathers don't have the same relationship with their kids as mothers because the mothers undermine it.
Absolutely, without question. And again, my own experience is in that my wife Diane, and then her mother, after Diane was killed, poisoned their minds. And so, as a result, I don't have the right...
And you don't see any connection between you pushing their mother, Diane, out of a moving car on Interstate 5 and killing her?
No, but the connection, I've already talked to you about that. I did my time. I paid for the crime, as we say. And I certainly made amends to my children. So why wouldn't they, in a Christian society, why wouldn't they forgive me?
Good question. 1-800-449-8686, Mr. Herb Sewell, documentary filmmaker. Here is Marty. Marty, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Herb Sewell.
Hello.
Yes.
Comment. Yes, in a Christian society, turn the other cheek. However, I'd like to just make one point. You've said several times that your children are selfish and have been influenced by their grandparents.
Well, absolutely.
Or that the wife was mouthy and wouldn't shut up. You have taken no accountability whatsoever. And furthermore, just because you did your time in prison...
Well, I did 6 years of that.
It doesn't matter that you did time in prison. You keep pointing your fingers to other people. Instead of looking at yourself, you murdered your mother, the mother of your children.
No, it was third-degree manslaughter, for which I did 6 years
in the jury. That's what the jury stated. You pushed her out of a moving vehicle, and you blamed your mother-in-law and your father-in-law and everybody else for your children not talking to you.
Well, Marty, if I could get a word in edgewise, if you have the same problem my wife had, you wouldn't... You know, shut up, and I don't mean to say shut up, but you just won't be quiet. Listen, first of all...
Well, you've got to let my callers have their say, and then you can say what you want to say.
That's fine. But The mother-in-law in question is this woman who is my so-called mother-in-law. I say so-called mother-in-law because I call her the creature. And the reason why I call her the creature is simply this. She is the one really at the heart
of
the matter.
Okay, but I'm going to interrupt you. This creature gave birth to your three children.
This is exactly why Diane got herself pushed out of the car. Because she wouldn't be quiet.
And belittle and degrade are part of your children. So while you're belittling
your children have been influenced. No, they've been influenced by the creature, and that's why they don't give me respect that I'm deserving. Now, Marty, you are a very good example. One of the reasons why I did the movie is to not only show what's happening to fathers, but show women such as yourself who constantly want to blame you're the reason, Marty, that young people don't want to speak with their fathers. Because you talk all the time, don't you? Are you married?
I've been married for 14 years.
And I'm
a Christian.
Well, but what? You're a Christian, but you don't buy that turn the other cheek thing. You see, that's what I love about a lot of you.
You criticize your deceased wife, call her a creature, and that creature's blood is in your children. So when you cut down your deceased wife, you're cutting down your kids.
No, I'm not cutting down my wife. I'm cutting down the creature, the mother-in-law, and that is the creature. My wife simply couldn't shut up. You know, now, as to the Christian,
doesn't sound like you can either.
As to the Christian society that you claim to be a part of, the hypocrisy there, I think, is evident for all to see, that we live in a society there that...
Well, wait a minute. You push their mother out of a... You know, there is such a thing as trauma, where even if a child says, yes, Daddy, we forgive you, they'll never forget seeing...
Well, then someone needs to teach them that. And who should teach them that? But the people that the court has awarded the custody to, which is the creature and her husband, my so-called father-in-law. Now, my wife, out of her own insecurity, turned my three children against me, yes.
You just point fingers. You're one of millions of people who refuse to take accountability, responsibility, and accept what they've done.
Listen,
and
I did 6 years at
everybody else instead of looking at yourself. And I'm going to make one last comment. May God have mercy on your soul.
Jesus loves you. Now,
all right, so what is this?
Well, she claims to be a Christian. She's brought, for all I know, she's a Muslim.
All right.
See, the sarcasm...
No, she's making fun of your laugh.
Well, the laugh comes from the idiocy of that woman's position and calling herself Christian, and she can't forgive me.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Celine, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
I need to say to you that marriage is a two-way street.
Yes.
You have problems... the wife has problems, the husband has problems. There are ways to solve problems.
Uh-huh.
Growing up, I have gone on the grapevine. What a terrible, terrible thing that you did, especially in front of your children.
Well,
if nothing else, you should have pulled with that laugh. You're not going to get any forgiveness.
I'm not.
And I am a good Christian.
Well, then you have to
pulled over on the side of the road, taking her out of the car and discuss this with her. Your children have no business forgiving you because you did something that was unforgivable.
What I'm talking about, Dr. Sewell, is that you pushed your wife out of a moving car at 90 miles an hour, and I haven't heard you say, I was wrong.
Well, Mr. Henry, 6 years at Avenal State Prison is enough. I was wrong, I think. I don't know what more you want from me. Now, my children need to come to me and say, we're sorry that we're being disrespectful to you, Daddy.
Even though you pushed their mother out of a car.
Well, it's not as if I was doing the worst thing in the world. The children knew that she talked too much.
You need to face reality.
All right, thank you, Celine. 1-800-449-8686. Herb Sewell is doing a documentary on fathers. Why are they so left out? He pushed his wife out of a moving car in front of his kids, but he still doesn't understand why they won't talk to him. 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686.
You're a butt log with legs.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Now, I understand Herb Sewell is with you. I understand you're en route now, Herb, to a screening.
That is correct, Phil. If you don't, and if you can hear me, because I am on a...
You're coming in fine.
All right.
In any event, Herb Sewell is with us, a documentarian. He's made a film about fathers and how they are the neglected parent and how kids don't, they're not as close to their fathers as possible. Your story, and I'm sorry to have to keep bringing it up, is a little different. You admit that you pushed your wife out of a moving vehicle in front of your kids back some 6-7 years ago. You did prison time for this, correct?
I did manslaughter, yes. But so the court even acknowledged I didn't even do it so much as I saw myself doing it. I have to, you have to get, this was almost, and Dr. Fitterman told me it was an out-of-body experience. I saw myself doing it. So I was almost a witness. I was traumatized as well. I was a witness to myself. And I'm sure you've heard people say, I saw myself doing this. People who have committed these vicious crimes.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard people say, I saw myself do it. So in the mind of a psychiatrist, what does that mean?
In the mind of Dr. Fitterman, who treated me at Avanol, I was traumatized as well. So I was horrified. I was like another person in the car watching this vicious man do this, even though it was me doing it. Now, that all begs... This has all been talked about, and I really want to get on with talking about my film, because I can tell you that...
Well, but there is a court... Have you petitioned the court to compel your daughter, Kim, to see you?
I didn't know that was public, but yes, I have...
Well, I've got a pretty good staff here. You have petitioned the court to compel your daughter, Kim, to allow you to attend her wedding.
I, as her father, have the right to walk her down the aisle. I don't know if you have a daughter, but that happened...
Yes, I do. I've got a 12-year-old daughter.
Well, when the time comes that young lady is going to be married, it is the right of a father to walk his daughter down the aisle. So we have petitioned the court something called Penal 13, section of Penal Code, actually, which enables custody in extenuating circumstances. Now, she is of age, but I want to walk her down the aisle at her marriage to a young man who is a prominent member of the film industry.
But don't you, this kind of stuff can be seen, in other words, as you want to walk your daughter down the aisle so that you can be in with a son who's in the film industry.
No, that's not the case at all. No. I'm saying...
Well, that's what it looks like. You're a documentarian. This young, what does he do?
He is, actually, he's the son of a studio executive, so he's really not in the field. He's the son of a major studio chief. But that's no. My children have lost their mother, but they gained a father who's loving and anger-free due to the 6 years I did, three of which were in isolation due to violence considerations.
You were in isolation 3 years because of violence, and now you're out, and now you want to walk your daughter down the aisle, the daughter who witnessed you push her mother from a moving vehicle when she was, what, 14 years of age, and now you also have a movie out talking about how fathers are neglected, and you don't even take responsibility for this because it was an out-of-body experience. I just want to make sure...
My documentary reenacts the entire scenario with a wonder... Meredith Baxter Burney plays my wife in a dramatization, yes. And you'll see, Meredith does a wonderful job of approximating Diane never shut up. She just talked and talked and talked. And you will see how any man would be compelled to just swing the door open and do as I did. I remember I took my foot off the gas just long enough, and I'm thinking about it now, it traumatizes me, but I lifted my right leg up.
And you kicked her out of the car.
Yes.
Stephanie, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hello?
Yes, Stephanie, go ahead.
I cannot believe that this man is out of prison, number one. What is wrong with our penal system that a man can murder...
I did every day of the time that was assigned to me by the court.
Excuse me, sir. Something is wrong with our courts. Excuse me for using sir so loosely. What is wrong with our courts that they would only give you 6 years for murdering...
I didn't murder
this
her.
...woman
an
in front of their children. Out-of-body, my experience, my ass.
No, you've
excuse
heard...
me, sir, but something is also wrong with the psychologist and with the parole board at Avanol State Prison, and they will get a letter from me that they have allowed you to be on the street.
What is your qualification?
My qualification is that I am a mother who has a husband and three sons that are loving fathers.
Well,
trust me, they wouldn't murder their children's mothers.
Well, if they blathered on, they must be very lucky.
Me, you know what? I blather on like the best of them, thank God. Because it's men like you that need to be put in their place.
Well, wait a minute. What's your deal? First of all, I did the time. I paid for the crime by doing that. Number two.
You know what? You
I
did not
saw
pay
myself.
The time.
I was
because it's a life for a life. Read the frickin' Bible. You
oh,
preach
everybody's
about being a Christian.
The Bible. Well, people
what happened to an eye for an eye?
That's not Christian. That's the New. That's the Old Testament.
You
that's
know what?
The New Testament.
You know what?
Now, the
sir,
lady that called from
your
Atlanta.
Children,
called
your children should never speak to you again. And how you can do a film documentary on being a father? This
well,
is the biggest
I think
joke
I've
ever
abused,
heard.
Like
why would anybody pay money to allow you to do a film documentary? I'm sure it had to be self-financed because nobody would be in with you on this.
I want to ask you a question
here.
Herb, I want to ask you a question. How has your daughter responded to the court, you wanting to compel the court to have you walk her down the aisle?
We're expecting a response from her attorney, but I certainly have the right to walk my daughter down the aisle when she's marrying a prominent member of the film industry. Now, this happens to be what I do for a living. You know, are you telling me?
Well, how self-serving can you be to want to walk your daughter down the aisle, a daughter that you traumatized by pushing her mother out of the car, and then?
Let me ask Stephanie. Stephanie, being a mother, don't you think that I have the right to make a speech at my daughter's wedding?
No, I do not. And
why?
if that
what?
Daughter doesn't have a restraining order to keep you 500 miles from her wedding, something's wrong with her.
Well, ma'am, let me just say,
you are a dangerous man, sir. You are still a dangerous man because you have not owned this at all.
No, I'm not dangerous. I saw myself doing it.
You are a sick, dangerous man.
Well, I wouldn't drive on the grapevine with your husband and family if I were you.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. I don't want to drive on any freeway near you because you are a very dangerous man, and the parole boards at Avenal State Prison will hear from me.
Well, you can rest assured that 3 years in isolation, I will never push a woman out of a car.
You still ought to be in isolation because you're a kook.
You know, Stephanie, let me just say it's a good thing I didn't marry you.
I don't even listen to the radio station, nor I am giving you time, but I have never been so angry in my life.
Mr. Sewell, what you're not getting is that it doesn't matter if you apologize to your children. It doesn't matter if it was an out-of-body experience. They witnessed their mother getting pushed from a car.
And you know, when she was getting shoved from that car, she was still talking. I can still see her falling backwards onto the freeway and her mouth still moving on about some house she saw in La Cañada. Can you imagine that? So I...
Wait a second. Are you listening to what we're saying, though, sir?
I understand what you're saying. I told you that I am trying to make amends. Kimberly won't let me make a speech at her wedding. And I do want to show a copy of my film to her new husband. Why can't I do this? I don't understand. I've done everything that I can to make amends to these children. And what do I get in return? I'll have a father-daughter dance at her wedding... If it kills me. Stephanie, I was nude in isolation. Nude.
You know what?
I have no clothes on.
Sir, and you should still be stripped nude and still be in isolation. And thank God for the grandmother of your children that have raised them to understand
Amen.
That you are a sick man.
Amen.
Oh, the creature.
Thank God to the grandmother of your children.
I praise
that woman for helping them to see the truth about their father.
Ah, now you're speaking of the creature. So you've never met the creature, so you...
You are a creature, sir. You are a creature.
This is a woman is raising your children.
Raising my children to hate their father, who in a moment's weakness kicked their mother out of a car.
At 90 miles an hour on the grapevine.
Whatever.
Oh,
all right.
You know what, Phil?
You know,
please don't give this man any more airtime.
I appreciate your call very much, Stephanie.
Thank you.
1-800-449-8686. I'm going to take one more phone call, and I want you to understand.
Well, I'd like to speak about my film, if I could.
We'll talk about your movie. Okay? But everything out of your mouth here is she was still talking as she was falling backwards out of the car. Amanda, go ahead.
Look, I know you're all upset that your daughter's not letting you go to her wedding, but my father wasn't at my wedding. For 15 years, I had to deal with abuse from my father and watch him beat on my mom. No, he didn't kill my mom, but I'm 24 now, and it's taken me the biggest part of my life to even be nice to my father. No, he didn't go to my wedding, and if I was to do it over again, he still wouldn't go to my wedding because I didn't get along with him. You can't respect someone that doesn't respect you. And you've got to understand that the mother of your child is your child looks at them as the most important thing.
You have to hear this, Herb, okay?
Look, Amanda, please understand that even I couldn't believe it. Wasn't me doing it. It was an out-of-body experience.
It was you. No.
I was witnessing
that.
It.
I do not believe that.
In fact, they called me as a witness.
You can separate yourself from the situation. I've had to, I don't know how many times, separate myself from a violent situation. It's very hard for me right now to talk to you and not want to reach through the phone and talk to you. Okay.
But ma'am, do you understand that if I could reach out to my new son-in-law, I could get Hillary Duff to reenact the role of my daughter.
I don't care who you have to reenact the role of your daughter. The fact is, I'm the eldest child of an abusive situation, and it has taken me the biggest damn part of my life to even be nice to my father, to even be nice and tolerable to him. You know how it...
Well, you know, Amanda, this is Phil Henry. Amanda,
sometimes cringes.
Amanda, this is Phil, and I, as far as I'm concerned, you shouldn't even have to talk to your father. You shouldn't talk to him. He should
See,
be the one who comes
thing.
To you.
When my grandpa died 3 years ago.
What kind of advice did he give to that young lady? He tried to get me to
forgive my father and to be nice to
him. I wouldn't if I were you. You don't have any duty to do
that.
Mr. Henry, you are abusing this young lady as much as her father did by giving her advice like
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
No, I'm not.
Come on.
Your father is abusing your mother. Abusing your mom is like torture. All I did was open a door and punt my wife out the door like a football.
You pushed her out the door, which is a hell of a lot worse than ever hitting her.
Do you understand?
You killed her in front of your kids.
No, your
and
father.
That's worse than ever hitting her.
Miss Henry, you see my point, don't you?
Wait a second. Are you trying to say that because you didn't beat on your wife, you just kicked her out of a car once? It's not as bad as what this girl's father did to her mother?
If I were to go back and redo things, I would much rather have had my dad do something worse than see him beat on her for 16 years of marriage.
Look, have you ever played
because
kickball?
Because he also beat on us and... You know, it's hard to see that. It's hard to trust a man after that.
Amanda, hold on for a minute. What did you just say, Mr. Sewell?
I asked Amanda if she's ever played kickball.
And why did you ask her that?
It was like a moment in kickball. That's
kicking your wife out of a car.
You are an ass.
Amanda, please understand that if I can meet my new son-in-law, he can hook me up to the Culkin brothers to play my two sons and Hillary Duff to play my daughter in the reenactment. And if I can do that, I'll blow Michael Moore's stuff out of the water.
I hope you never, never, never make anything, as far as movies or anybody else. I hope that you rot
what you just said to me,
and your children never, never get to have a part of you ever. And I hope you never see your grandchildren. Because
what you just said to me is worse than what I did to my wife.
You don't need to have a part of their life.
Come on.
You don't even deserve it.
Can I demonstrate for both of you?
Because you make an apology.
I can demonstrate
for sharing the fact that you killed your wife, the mother of your child.
This is exactly why I threw her out of the car. Now, I want Jim, Jim Doheny is with me.
You better be careful if you're not in the car with me, because I was throwing you out, too.
I know, Jim.
Jim, say hello to Phil.
Hello, Phil.
Hey, Jim.
I want to demonstrate something. If Amanda's still there, Jim's in the car with me right now.
I'm here.
All right, we're on the 110 freeway. We're heading into Pasadena right now. Jim.
Congratulations.
This is the Avenue 43. I'm going to pick you up here. I'm going to swing around when I get up to Fair Oaks, all right? But I'm going to kick him out of the car right here. This is not that.
Hey, you know what?
What?
You said it on air. Now you're convicted. Now it's manslaughter.
Now it's manslaughter. All right, watch this. Open the door.
See, now it's manslaughter because you're kicking him out of your car. I've had a friend who was stuck out of the car. And now he has to start everything all right over again.
I just kicked him out of the car at Avenue 43.
Are you kidding me? Are you nuts?
Let me call the police because I can call the police. I got called waiting.
No, Amanda, we got it covered. Don't worry. Thank you, though. Thank you for your call.
No, wait a minute. Don't let this young... I just kicked that guy. I can see him. He's waving to me from the exit ramp. He's fine.
What?
God, I hope you run into a very,
all right.
very
if
big
if you don't believe
man.
It, I'll kick myself out of the car. Watch this.
There you go.
Ah!
Okay, Janice, I want you to find out what happened there. Are you there, Amanda? Is Amanda... Amanda, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that. I don't understand people like that.
I want to understand people like that. He just threw himself out of his own car.
This is bad to say, and I am a Christian too. And I do my best to forgive people, and I do believe in the turn the other cheek. But there's only so many times.
Yeah, I hear
you. Forgive
all right,
somebody.
Amanda,
you know?
Thank you for your call. Thank you very much for your call, man.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
How is he back? Are you back on?
Yes, I'm right here.
Did you throw yourself out of your own car?
Yes, I did. And then I caught up to my car. And
oh, get out of here.
No, wait a minute. Hold on for a minute.
No, get out of here.
No, just one thing, Phil. I just want you to hear, if you think my wife died horribly, I want you to hear the last thing that she heard.
Isn't that funny? Herb Sewell. I wonder why my kids won't talk to me. I just booted their mom out of a car. Happy Monday. 1-800-449-8686. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.
You flip a bone in a Korean War veteran and you pull back a bloody stump.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Kind of a news night tonight on the Phil Henry Show as we go through our mailbag. A couple of flashbacks from our show on Friday with Dean Wheeler, who believes that the Al-Qaeda terrorist organization has won, and the only way to mollify them, the only way to get them off our backs is to sacrifice one of the so-called cross-believers, as the Al-Qaeda calls Christians. So he wants to give them Benny Hinn or Jan Crouch's head. Because he said, quote, Jan Crouch especially has a flamboyant head. And she does. And also we have Vernon Dozier, who was playing dress-up and fashion show at his daughter's slumber party and doesn't get why a father who picked his daughter up the next day was shocked seeing Vernon answer the door in a floor-length negligee, heels, and full makeup at 9:30 in the morning. And I promise that I am not going to talk about Michael Moore tonight. Why do I need to talk about Michael Moore when David Letterman effectively did it for me last night? Was it last night's show or Friday night show? Letterman had Michael Moore on. Now get this. Get the setting. Understand that this happened. And this is, more than anything else, an example of the kind of narcissist the guy is. He's so into himself. It's kind of like years ago I did this bit. I set up Larry King. I called his office and pretended I was somebody else. In fact, we could play the bit. And we've played it before. And King is such a narcissist into himself, he didn't know that he was being put on, right? Anyway, Letterman says to Moore, how can we trust the facts in your movie? And Moore responds with a straight face, well, I got a lot of my information from the New York Times. The audience erupts in laughter. Letterman is trying to stifle a laugh, and Moore's looking around like, what's so funny? Can you imagine that fat ass being so into his big fat self that he doesn't get the joke? The New York Times was his source material. Good luck. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show.
Coming up tonight, more on Paul Johnson. Reality shows. INXS's band is looking for a new lead singer, and they're going to use a reality show to get it. Oh, my sweet feathery God. Or as my daughter and her friends say,
you didn't, sister.
Or something like that. I don't know how... And Colby's hearing the story of the cattle rancher, the curious story of the Nevada cattle rancher. This week's Star Magazine's most unflattering, just belittling photographs. As you know, they go out of their way to show the stars looking just as large and unwieldy as possible. A flashback with Vernon Dozier, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. The Ojai Voice. Stem cell research. Mike Tyson will fight again. He just doesn't know where. Another flashback from Dean Wheeler and Phil's mailbag. But first, I had a poker game at my house this weekend. Now, I invited over the usual guys. I had the Swede, the Keen brothers were there. DJ couldn't make it. His mother, and I hope she's feeling better, Don, is not very well. And, you know, the usual, the Swede was there looking tanned and fit and getting hammered as usual. I was there. And I was hosting it. So now, you know, here's the thing when you host a poker party, as I've told my sons this. I said, boys, you'll be getting into the world of poker soon. And that means when you host a poker party, you have to provide the food and a modicum of drink. Guys will usually show up with their own six-pack of, for instance, in the case of these guys, Bass Ale, which I wouldn't touch with your lips. I'm not into that heavy. You know these guys that are, I like a good, thick, heavy ale. Not me, no. Why? Why do I need to drink that? You know what? I'm a California beer. I'm an American beer drinker. I'm a lager beer drinker. I was raised on the cool, bubbly flavor of good American lager. I don't need to go back to the old country and pretend I'm James Joyce sitting there getting hammered out of my skull, and then I'll wander out and collapse on a sidewalk and die, and everyone will say, all hail the poet. No. That's not going to be my end, thank you very much. If I die, I die with a bottle of Corona in my hand, or I don't die at all. Let me have a Guinness. Yeah, that's fine, and yes, I am Irish. These guys that go down, you know, the one great thing about America, and it is a very endearing part of our country, is we all like to remember where our people came from. Well, my people came from Germany, and my people came from Ireland, and some others people came from Italy, and another guy came from France, and, you know, we're all from all over the world, and I'm African-American and Hungarian. The only people that everybody gets upset with pointing out their ethnicity are the African-Americans. Why do you have to keep saying that you're black? Why can't you just be a... Meanwhile, there's 9 million Hungarian folk festivals going on around here. We got Italian Americans this, and we got the French Americans that, and the Russian Americans. And I'm sure there's a Chinese American organization somewhere, and I'm sure there's bound to be popping up sooner or later Americans of Nepalese descent, Mozambique, and Botswana. But these guys with your Guinness, no. Not me. Anyway, they show up with their Bass Ale. Cram it all in there. I myself drink Heineken. As much as I was saying I'm an American lager drinker, frankly, I'm a Dutch lager drinker. Thank you very much. Well, I'll start drinking American beer again as soon as they start making some that you can drink. It's as simple as that. What do you think, huh? Got to get a vote on that? All right. As soon as they make an American beer that's actually drinkable, I'll start drinking it. Until then, and don't tell me about the mini breweries, or what do they call those places? The micro breweries. I've had a couple of them. Sierra Nevada ain't bad. What do you like? Oh, here's Mark's favorite microbrewery, Pabst Blue Ribbon. No, you're right, Mark. The Pabst just ain't cutting it for me anymore, man. Even though I am wearing my black shoes and my white socks today. So anyway, I had the poker game. Don't you love to host a poker game where you provide the food, you provide the beer, and basically you're providing the money, too? And you see some guy sit at the end of the table. He's got a stack of chips the size of the former World Trade Center, and he's eating your sandwiches. And I went out, you know, when I host a poker game, this is what I do. I go down to Vaughn's, I go to the deli, and I say to the guy, 3 pounds of that, 3 pounds of that, 3 pounds, you know, in other words, roast beef, ham, give me some of that cotto salami, give me a whole bunch of American cheese, give me some of that Havarti, give me some Swiss, give me some of this, give me some of that. Then I go over to the deli case, and I get those two big tubs of potato salad. And then I get a whole bunch of, like, sourdough bread, and that's the end of it. And then I go and I get a couple of 24 packs of Heine, and that's my contribution to the poker game. And then I drag the table into the house, and that's where we play. And these guys are playing a game called Omaha. Omaha, for the uninitiated, is you get four cards, you can only use two. It's a high-low game, meaning best hand and the worst hand split the pot. It's a very lucrative game, because you always wind up with a lot of money in the middle, and you get four cards, you can only use two, and then they deal, I think there's five in the middle. And I was getting throttled, just thrashed. I mean, how can a guy concentrate on, hey, Phil, got any more beer or anything? You know, your friends are being very polite, but you know they fully expect it, right? Phil, you got any beers or anything? What if I said no, I expected you guys to bring your own? No, I don't have any beer. You know, and I pull the cooler in from the garage. I got one of those Colemans. I bring it in. I stack a bunch of bottles of Heine at the bottom of that thing, throw the ice on top of it. Then I throw a bunch of soft drinks in there. And then I drag it into the room so nobody's got to keep getting up and going to the refrigerator, right? Yeah, it's right there, man. Phil, you got an opener? Yeah, right in front of you, man. Hey, Phil, can you lose another few hands so I can just... Yeah, sure, whatever you say. Phil, that those sandwiches are good, man. You got any more?
You guys ate it all, man? There's like 60 pounds of meat out there.
So, you know, and then you're cleaning up.
It's the camaraderie, though, isn't it? It's the camaraderie?
Sure it is.
Yeah. So, in other words, at the end of the day, I'm handing over all of my money, and I'm cleaning the house up, too, from the slobs that were just there taking all of my dough. There's nothing like a great poker game. I'm telling you, it's just fantastic.
But I told my sons, I said, you host a poker game, you got to provide the food, the drink, and then you sit down and then you play, okay? And it's very hard sometimes to concentrate on your game when you're getting up and you're doing stuff for people because you're the host of the damn thing. Unlike my friend the redhead, and I don't want to give his name because I do not want to indict the innocent, but let me just say this. Hey, Bell, next time we have one at your house, do we all have to really use the bathroom in the garage?
Are you ready for that? His girlfriend says, and I don't want those ne'er-do-well friends of yours using the bathroom in the house. I don't want all my pee stains all over the floor. And so we got to go and pee in the garage like animals.
So in other words, he's got a back patio, which is fine. It's a great place to if we can smoke cigars out there and it doesn't stink the house up, that's great, right? But we're not allowed to use the can in the house because we're too much of a pack of animals to be able to hit the bowl. I said, where's the next game? And I think he said, yeah, my house. I said, are you kidding? I got to go and use some can in the garage. And it was like, this is the guy's own house, and yet there's even graffiti in that bathroom. I mean, he goes in there and just for old time's sake, scrawls the name of his wife and a phone number. I'm kidding around. Ray goes in and he graffitis up his own can. Just to make him feel at home. So you know what I did? I don't know, it might have been a few beers later. I stood out at his back lawn, and I said, oh, Ray, you were not supposed to use the house? Watch this. Came back about 3 days later. Says, hey, you know that big brown spot there, man? Why don't you put a plant there or something? Yeah, you need a little fertilizer, man? Great game, poker. Fantastic. And now the whole world's getting turned on to poker. Oh, yeah. Now all the celebrities are playing. Not that they didn't play before, but they can't wait to be seen on television in the World Series of Poker. What's that one on Bravo? The good one is the one on, like, either the Travel Channel. The one on the Travel Channel is the good one. That's the one where they have, like, real tournaments. Remember the one where they have, the real tournaments with the real guys and there ain't no celebs? And they have it. They had one. I loved it, man. They had this Australian dude who was going up against a couple of frogs at some gentleman's club in Paris. The World Poker Championships, is that what it's called? And this Aussie wouldn't shut up. He was table-talking big time. And I guess the frogs don't table-talk when they play poker. Apparently, it's not seen as gentlemanly in the gentlemanly poker clubs of Paris, right? In American tradition, and maybe British and Australian, we table-talk all the time. You know, did you get your straight? Did you pull it, huh? Did you hit the inside, huh? Did you get your card? Hey, you got the card, didn't you? And that's what this Aussie's doing to these frogs. Going, you got your card, didn't you? That's right, I can tell, but look on your face, you got your card, right? Huh? You get your card? And this frog's looking like he's just about ready to push a brick out. Celebrity Poker Showdown on Bravo? No, I don't want to see that. Ben Affleck is with us. Boy, he's not a bad card player, is he, Bob? No, he's all in on this hand. Oh, a pair of deuces. Good going, Ben. Well, Ben's a real sport. Yeah, I know, he plays all the time. I'm sure he's just real cutthroat. I bet you he's just ass-kicking. I bet you if I got in a game with those guys, I'd be sent home a weeping and a crying. Matt Perry, is he in those games?
Matthew Perry has a flush and he's folding. Matt,
maybe somebody ought to tell him.
Well, I don't know.
He's probably pretty good too. I have enough of the celebrity thing. When I watch poker, I just want to, you know.
Danny Masterson's good at the poker game.
Who?
Danny Masterson is pretty good at the poker game. He's pretty good.
The guy from that 70s show?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What do you mean he's pretty good?
Mimi Rogers plays too.
Well, good for you. Go watch the freaking Bravo channel then, bud. Danny Masterson's good at me. So what do you want? You want me to play? Well, I wouldn't mind playing around with, hand with Mimi Rogers. I wouldn't mind giving her a hand.
Yeah, where?
Anyway. But poker's a great game, and I suggest you take it up. Beats the hell out of blackjack. Six ways to sunset. Just pounds blackjack into the dust. It's a more leisurely game, takes far more skill. It's a more convivial game. There's a lot of camaraderie. Poker, blackjack is a little bit too cutthroat and too quick and too all about the money. Poker's about the money, too, but if you lose, say, oh, I don't know, say you drop a grand one night, so what? Just make sure you vacuum up before your wife gets home. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Got to talk a little bit about Paul Johnson's hometown, and they got a stamp out Islam sign there. It doesn't sound like a bad idea, but I'll tell you why it is anyway. And also, the reality show, it's going to be called Superstar in Excess. Remember that band In Excess? Michael Hutchence, the former lead singer who killed himself? They're looking for a lead singer. They're going to do it with a reality show. All right, 1-800-449-8686. We also have Star Magazine's most unflattering pictures. Man, they got some people in there that looking like they're road hard and put up wet, man. Like 6,000 miles of bad street. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Some guy put up a sign in Paul Johnson's hometown of Eagleswood Township, a sign that said, Stamp Out Islam. And I can understand his anger. And apparently it had everybody up in arms. And the local president of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, which, that's the problem that I have and so many people have, is the only time I hear from the Muslim community of America is when somebody says Muslims are not doing very well by the rest of the world. And then all of a sudden, hey, wait a minute, what did you just say? Meanwhile, when guys' heads are getting cut off in the name of Islam, when people are getting brutalized and tortured six ways to sunset, every kind of unacceptable, despicable act in the name of Islam, I don't hear peep one. I don't hear anybody say anything. Okay, so maybe that's the Muslim way. I don't know. However, I can tell you why the idea of stamping out Islam is a bad idea, or anybody posting a sign like that. And it doesn't have anything to do with the traditional view of, hey, you know, you shouldn't indict a whole group just because of the actions of a few. That's true. There's no doubt that that is true. But there's a far better and far more historically realistic reason why we shouldn't make this about Islam versus Christianity. Like I was telling you guys last week, the ragheads over there have had this problem about Christianity ever since the Crusades and the Moorish invasion of Europe. The Crusades being the Christian promulgated or promoted military effort to reclaim the Holy Land from the Mohammedans, as they were called in those days. And that was like over 1,000 years ago. And then the Moors invaded Europe and got as far as the Pyrenees Mountains, and they were driven back out. And so there's been a real serious axe grinding down there among the raghead population. And when I say the ragheads, understand I'm talking about the traditional enemies that we call terrorists or just Muslims who are insane, who like they want to gut any dude that's wearing a U.S. military uniform or anybody that says that they like baseball. They just want to gut them like a steer, right, and hang them upside down. That's what I mean by a raghead. You know, the insurgents in Iraq, whatever the hell you want to call them. I call them a raghead. All right, now, the ragheads over there, they want a new holy war. They want that. At least they want it to be seen that way on the Arab street. You know, we hear so much about this Arab street. Well, the Arab street is the street where the regular rank-and-file Arab lives. Now, he can be poor, he might be rich, he reads the newspaper. A lot of the people that are interviewed over there are cab drivers, shopkeepers, what have you. The common man. And among them, it wants to be the Al-Qaeda individuals and their ilk want this to be a holy war. They want to be Islam versus Christianity, the holy Crusaders, you know, they keep, you know, Bush blew it, man, when he used the word crusade because, oh my God, Bin Laden milked that one for 6 months. Aha! He said crusade. You heard him say crusade. He said, I heard him say crusade. That's right. Let's do it. Come on. Let's use that. I want it in every press release. Get your finger out of your nose. Will you get that machine working? What do you want me to put it? Put down crusade. That's, I just heard the man say it.
crusade, is it? I'll show you a crusade. Why, you infidel. And then, you know, the whole dagger in the teeth and snaking over the hill like in the cartoons.
So, they want it to be a holy war about, and it ain't, man. It's not. It's not about Islam versus Christianity. It's about, like, as I've said, it's about the future versus the past. Or if that's far too, if that is far too obtuse, then it's about civilization versus animals that want us to be living in the Stone Age. It's as simple as that. And I shouldn't even say animals, because they're very wily people. They're very smart. They know what pushes our buttons. They know how to use the propaganda machine. But to say stamp out Islam is wrong on a lot of different levels. But the most important thing to understand is it ain't about Islam. I know that there's a lot. I know it. I understand how you feel. Because when I see somebody with the towel wrapped on their head, man, I get a little tense inside, too. And I got to kind of tell myself, no, wait a minute. We're all individuals. We're all people. And not all of us are a bunch of or a pack of, you know, butt wipes. If I may say that. Hold on for a minute.
FCC.
Oh, hi. Can I say butt wipe?
You sure can't.
Thank you. So, that's why that's a little over the top, you know, and you gotta just take a little bit of a chill on that thing. Now, even as I am talking this way, because this is America, and we try to keep our heads about us, because that's what Rudyard Kipling said you should do. Even as we say this, we're getting information that the Al-Qaeda was helped by the Saudis. And I don't doubt that for a minute, that the people that murdered Paul Johnson were helped by the Saudi police. I don't doubt it for a minute. I don't think you should either. That we also have information that the Saudi government was aligned with Al-Qaeda before 2001 so that Al-Qaeda would not commit atrocious acts on their soil, so that they assisted them in different ways. Or let's just say, look the other way when Al-Qaeda was organizing and operating. All of this indicts the Saudi government in ways that I can't even begin to imagine, let alone articulate. Now you say to me, well, okay, so they're a pack of scumbags, Phil, but aren't they friends of ours, and don't we need our business arrangement with them in terms of the oil? We do as far as it goes, but if they look like they're yesterday's news, and it's beginning to look like that more and more and more, we got to prepare ourselves for the next step down there. And the next step is some kind of a toppling of the Saudi regime, and maybe a more radical government. If it's more radical, how do you propose to deal with them? All the oil that you and I use is down there. Don't believe those TV commercials lately that tell you 60% of all the oil that we use in America is from, you know, North America. Get out of here. How do you propose we deal with it? Al-Qaeda, the guys that killed all those folks in New York, they could take over in Saudi Arabia. Now here, let me just raise my hand. I'm in favor of going in and killing them all with, like, American troops and missiles. Anybody with me? No, of course not. No, I didn't think so. I guess it's going to take something. I guess it's going to take the actual event to happen for people to wake up, man. Okay, 1-800-449-8686 is the number to this here show. We'll be right back with more on the Phil Hendry Show, including our mailbag.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
I just one more thing about Michael Moore. Just one more. Just one more. He said on Letterman, he is fully prepared to debate anyone. And he said anyone about the so-called facts in his film. And I'm just the guy you're looking for, Moore. Now, he said it, and he said anyone, didn't he? Now, he's with the Endeavor Agency. And I finally found her. They don't have a website or anything. I tried to find them. We're going to put calls in, and we're going to ask him to come on the show. And now, here's where I think it's kind of a trick statement that he made. He said he's willing to debate the, quote, facts in his film or something to that effect. Okay. That movie, okay, is going to make some statements such as, congressmen haven't read the Patriot Act. That may be true. Okay, I don't know if it's true or not. I want to debate this guy on his position vis-a-vis the Iraq War. That's what I want to debate him on. Not necessarily the statements that he makes in his film, because he takes them out of context, and he will therefore say, well, it's right there, in quotes, the guy said it, even though the guy might have said two sentences before, what I'm about to say two sentences later is a load of crap. Then two sentences later, I don't know my ass from a hole in the ground about the Patriot Act. Then two sentences later, he goes, now see, I was just kidding about that, I do. But he just pulls the phrase out that says, I don't know my ass from a hole in the ground about the Patriot Act. And then he's going to debate me as to whether that statement was actually said or not. And I'm going to have to, well, of course it was. But what was out of context? Well, it wasn't out of context. You know, everything. And a whole lot of other fat double talk. And when a guy that big, man, it ain't just double talk, man. It's double talk with whipped cream and a cherry on top. In fact, it's not only double talk, he's doing it with cream cheese shoved in his larynx.
You know, the fat jokes are not making it.
Who's asking you?
Or Mr. Hall.
I don't care what Mr. Hall said.
Well, every time you talk about the guy, you talk about fat.
That's none of your business. What are you, the critique? Some cat from the Orange County Register? Get out of here.
You're blowing it. You're blowing it big time with some Hollywood heavyweights.
Get out of here, bud. You suck. Time now for our Vernon Dozier flashback on the Phil Henry Show. Mr. Dozier was on our program. He wants to bond with his daughter while he still has time, while she's still a little girl. And, well, his wife was sick and she was in bed. So he decided during her slumber party that he'd, you know, catch up with his daughter and her friends, and he said, ah, come on, let's play dress-up. And he dressed up in women's clothing and helped them put on lipstick and high heels and even showed them how to do a fashion show. So when one of the fathers came to pick his daughter up the next day, it was a little shocking.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
You say you had a fashion, you know, you were playing dress-up with your daughter and her friends, and you taught them how to do a fashion show, right? Well, I've seemed to have lost connection with him. I wonder why that was. We'll try to get him back on the line. But I certainly in no way wanted to insult him. He thought that I was calling him, quote, gay. And that was not the case at all. I simply was saying to him, when you say you're doing dress up with girls, I mean, your daughter's friends, they're 11-year-old girls, and you're a guy. Is he back? Mr. Dozier? No. I'm having a hard time talking.
I'm right here, Phil.
Okay.
What did you want to ask me?
I didn't mean to insult you, and I apologize.
Well, if you're serious.
I am.
All right, I
mean, and would you please demonstrate again the fashion show moves that you were teaching the girls?
You're just going to laugh at me?
No, I'm not going to laugh.
Well, I have, if Mark has the music.
Yeah, Mark, go ahead, play it again.
All right. Let's say, for instance, I'm wearing a Halston or something, something loose, something light, because it's getting very hot. And by the way, kill the music. You don't think I'm a cross-dresser or a fag, right?
No, I do not.
Why did I hear kind of a laugh in your voice?
I don't, honest.
Because I'm neither.
Okay.
I was playing dress-up with my daughter and her friends.
I understand that.
Anyway, go ahead, hit it, Mark. Now, you move very delicately, do a little bit of a flutter kick. Now, what that is, I lift up my right leg and just kind of flutter it at the judges. Then I do a little spin. I lay out and show the blouse. Purse my lips, squint my eyes, spin and turn. Now I do what's called working the pants.
What's that?
Okay, you laughed. All right, I just heard you laugh.
No, I swear to God.
You piece of...
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
You laughed, Henry. You laughed, and he hung up, man. He was just about to tell you how to work the pants. Like I need the lessons in that at 51. Anyway, there he is, baby. That is our own Vernon Dozier, a flashback from our show. Coming up, we're going to have Star Magazine's most unflattering picture, photographs. And by the way, Vernon Dozier is not a child molester or anything like that. The guy was just, so because we get the mail from people, you know, and we get the email and the comments from people. Oh, that bit you did about child molestation, where did you get that? Well, you did a thing with a guy who was dressing, you know, with girls. No, he's acting like an idiot is what he's acting. He's not a child molester. He's stupid. Well, in this day and age, Mr. Henry, people are going to miss it. Well, what are you, the self-appointed, you know, what are you, freaking Archbishop of the Decency Diocese? We'll decide on how we do it.
Well, I can assure you that I'll have a, you know, talk to your boss about it. Oh, come on, don't waste the freaking phone call, baby. Oh, it was about some screwball father who wants to put on makeup and, you know, and play like an idiot. He's not a child molester. Don't go there, even though it probably excites you to do so. How dare you? I was molested as a child. Oh, I see. Okay, so that gives you all the validity that you need to be stupid. Is that it? You don't understand what it's like. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about a guy acting like an idiot, and you already got it over to child molestation. See, this is my life, okay? I'm not trying to get you guys... You don't have to get crazy. I just, you know, kind of what I have to deal with, not what you have to deal with. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Star Magazine's most unflattering pictures coming up. We'll also be talking the curious tale of the cattle rancher. Kobe's hearing. What do you think? You think the Kobe thing's going to trial? I'm telling you right now, it ain't going anywhere near trial. Remember, I'm the guy that said the Lakers wouldn't get out of the Western Conference. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, they got out of the Western Conference, and they're sorry that they did. Coming up here on The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Time now for Star Magazine's most unflattering pictures. Yes, every week Star Magazine, of course, puts out their magazine. And they get guys with, like, the Hubble telescope, man, and they sneak up, like, 600 miles from a guy's house and take pictures through some lens that's, you know, they're renting. And what do you get? You get some fuzzy aquamarine blur that's supposed to be Julia Roberts or Margaret Cho. Actually, in Margaret Cho's case, you get something that resembles, it's like a small planet. I'm kidding. Not really, though, because Margaret Cho is actually in this week's Star Magazine. Now, this is an example of how you don't really want to have the before. Even if it's a before and after, don't show them what you looked like before. Why'd you do that? Margaret Cho, apparently, I didn't even know that. I didn't like her because, well, she's not funny, but more to the point, she's not funny. Now, here's what I'm talking about. Actually, that's the whole reason why I don't like her. She ain't funny. Oh, yeah, I know. One other reason. She wouldn't know her ass from a hole in the ground when it comes to, like, international politics, the state of the world, the state of the union, the state of the, you know, the economy. She probably doesn't even know what time of day it is, whether the sky's blue, whether it's green, whatever the hell it is she's wearing. Whatever it is, honey, take it off and put something else on. Anyway, I got a picture of her here in June of 2001. Oh, my God. That's, by the way, when you hear that, you'll know it's a bad picture. That's the, is that what you got, bud?
Yeah, that's the bad picture sound effect.
All right, thank you. Now, here's a picture of me, and this is...
You don't play it now!
It ain't a bad picture of me. I was just going to say, it's a picture of me on my website. All right, so anyway, but look at her. She's got on a, well, forget about what she's wearing. What's that underneath her chin?
Another chin.
I don't need for you to answer. I'll answer, thank you very much.
You can say she has more chins than a Chinese phone book. You can...
All right, bud, kill the music, kill the music. Kill the music and kill the horn. When I asked you to get me sound effects for this bit, I didn't want you to be a part of the bit. Do you understand? Get out of here.
Can I take the horn?
Yeah, take the freaking horn. That's the guy to give me sound effects, and he thinks he's in on the bit. More chins than a Chinese phone book. And now it's Star Magazine's unflattering pictures. So anyway, that's Margaret Cho. But I want to get to the real meat of the matter here, if you'll pardon the expression. Now look at this. Why in hell did David Guest have all that work done on his face? This is a question no one will ever really be able to answer, because in 1989, there's a photograph of him where he looks perfectly, almost handsome, wouldn't you say, Janice? It's almost a handsome look to him. He's self-mutilated. This is like something, I don't know what this is. This is something out of The Thing with Two Heads. This is something out of the worst sci-fi movie from the 50s you've ever seen. He went in, had surgery done to be ugly.
Here's the picture of him right here. If you look at it, he looks like a young, suave, kind of the hair's coiffed for the period. He's got a nice-looking nose, got a decent chin, good-looking eyes. He looks like a normal guy in his 30s, you know? Looks like a kind of late 30s. What they say about men when we get older, you know, a little bit of character, and there's a kind of a handsomeness that comes out in a man as he gains experience, okay? So why then would you want to take a perfectly good face like that, flatten the nose, lizard up the eyes a little bit, make sure the chin becomes something... It looks like a lump of turd. He went into the plastic surgeon and said, "Give me a chin that looks like a butt log, please." And then the guy, to make matters worse, he's put on weight and he cut his hair and he might even have had an ear lift. And now he's smiling, and the last thing you want to do, guest, is smile. No offense, but you ain't got a good smile, dude. When you smile, there's something, it's not disingenuous, it's otherworldly, it's like V. I keep waiting for your skin to come off, man, and something that looks like an iguana popping out. Or maybe that's just it, man, maybe the iguana has popped out. Wow, wow, wow. I hate this music, bud, get it out of here.
Can you take the horn, too?
Yeah. All right, now moving on. Here's one that you're never going to forget. This is a picture here of, that's who it is. Poor Carney Wilson. Is that the picture you want me to look at?
Which one is it? Kirstie Alley.
Kirstie Alley.
With the tablecloth on.
Ah, yes. Kirstie Alley has gotten so, thank you very much, Janice. Kirstie Alley has gotten so large that she's now wearing parts of the furniture. Again, I don't want to make fun because I happen to think she's a perfectly lovely woman, and I don't care how big she is. Star Magazine has not missed an opportunity to belittle this woman. And yeah, in fact, it says right here, "I can't believe Carney Wilson threw this tablecloth out." That's what Goomba Johnny, is that one of the fashion guys? Oh, so in other words, we stole his joke? Well, that's just great. Thanks for that joke, man. All right. So moving on then to the next picture, which is really horrific, and it's kind of like the culmination, the climax, if you will, is a picture here of a bunch of celebrities eating bananas. Now, I'm not sure why, but when they first told me, "Hey, Phil, you got to see these pictures of the celebrities eating bananas," I'm like, well, what difference does that make? What? Let me guess, they have a whole lot of black folks eating bananas. Well, in point of fact, they do. Of the 8 pictures shown, 5 of the actors shown eating the bananas are black, but I don't think that that's it so much as the picture here of Jerry Halliwell sucking on a banana in full view of the entire world standing out on a street in London. Now, she's got every right in the world to eat a banana, okay? And she's even got a right to eat the banana the way she was eating it. But the guy from Star Magazine sure picked his moment, if you know what I'm talking about. You got to see it in this week's Star. They also have a few other people that are eating bananas here. Like, there's one of, I think it's Ben Affleck. Yeah, here he is. They waited until he got the banana, like the last bit of the banana in his mouth, so there's a little bit sticking out. So, you know how you look when you've got a mouthful of banana? You look kind of like a jackass because it's all, and there's banana pouring out? That's how he looks. We just love stars. Yeah, I'll bet you do, man. You like them to look as bad as they possibly can. And then there's also the photo spread here of some pad, like I think it's George Clooney's pad in Italy, and everybody's partying there. And not that the pictures are bad, it's just that I kind of wanted to be there. This looks like a good time. There's Brad Pitt water skiing. There is Matt Damon with his new girlfriend. Julia Roberts shows up. And they're all sitting around drinking champagne at some palatial spread in Italy with George Ding Dang Clooney. Man! Dig that. I mean, wouldn't you want to be a part of that, just to sit down and listen to them throw their smack around about bad-mouthing their country and punk rock and all that stuff from Officer and a Gentleman? I would love to be just sitting in there and, really? Thank you, Mr. Clooney. And you'd have to listen to more manure, but it would be worth it. You could just sit there and eat all of the brie and whatever that crap is they eat, suck down some of that. I'm sure they have very good taste in food. What am I talking about? I'm sure they have, like, really cool stuff to eat. But you can sit there and listen to them talk and go water skiing, and they can all play, you know, whatever they do. badminton or whatever the hell, and just really thank you very much for inviting me, Mr. Clooney. Tell me again about how George Bush is a Nazi. That's great. They got a picture here of Julia Roberts taken with a lens that they borrowed from Palomar. What's the point, guys? I don't even know that it's her. It might as well be Mark Newman. I mean, it is such a blur. The guy took it from a helicopter in the next county, and the thing is just,
go ahead, I got, yeah, that's her.
And she looks like a bug. All I know, there's sunglasses on some chick. I'm pretty sure it's a chick. It could be a dude. Julia Roberts relaxes at George Clooney's house. It's either Julia Roberts or somebody else relaxing at somebody else's house. I don't think you got the right house. How can you tell, man, when you're shooting a thing from the moon? They got three pictures of Brad Pitt here, one water skiing, he's backing the boat out of the dock, and now he's giving Jennifer a back rub, and wait a second, that ain't Jennifer at all. That's Julia Roberts. And then there's Matt Damon with his new girlfriend, and they're all there at George Clooney's house talking crap about their country. Well, I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it, and I desperately want to be a part of it. I'll get Michael Moore on this show and debate him, and then after I kick his ass, I'll ask him, can you get me an invite maybe to like a party or something? Email address, phs@philhenryshow.com. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
This hour, we'll look into our email bag, and then we'll also have a flashback with Dean Wheeler. Mike Tyson wants to fight again, but nobody wants him to fight. You know, the world of boxing is so upstanding, so filled with honorable people, so overflowing, as it were, with good intention and sportsmanship. They can't possibly be seen with a guy like Mike Tyson now, can they? They won't let him fight in Jersey, or is it New York? I don't know where it is, but apparently they got something called boxing commissions that still pretend as if there's an organizational process to boxing. I'm not putting down the game. I think it's a great game, and I do enjoy watching prize fights. I don't like seeing men get brutalized necessarily. I'm not somebody who wants to see the blood flow. I don't mind a good knockout, but I don't even know what it is I'm looking at anymore. WBC, IBC, IBF, FTD, all of these things put together spells two words, poo-poo. Look it up in your dictionary. I'm like, what? So you're the heavyweight champion of what? And who set the fight up? And who are you ducking? And what tomato can are you fighting this week? And what Little Red Riding Hood did you duck last week? And just who are you anyway, okay? Just because somebody tells me the heavyweight champion of the world, well, look who we fought. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Anyway, Tyson wants to fight. Sure, he's a pug. But for somebody to say we don't want a guy like Mike Tyson in our game, well, are you kidding? What game is that? I'm not saying that people in boxing are, you know, necessarily rapscallions. I'm just saying, look at man, anybody can get into that game. The way they run that thing, the Seven Dwarfs could start training fighters. They could send Snow White out there as a legitimate contender, and there'd be pretty good money on her, and I swear to God, she is for all the world the second coming of Muhammad Ali. Why? Because they told you so. Next thing you know, there's thousands, millions, billions being bet on her, and when she's on the canvas within 15 seconds of the first round, everybody goes, fix! Didn't you know she was a bum going in? That's the problem with fights and the prize fight game. These guys get a buildup, like there's something special, like there's Sugar Ray freaking Robinson, Muhammad Ali, and Joe Louis all rolled into one, and they're actually bums, and when they get out there, and they're laying on the canvas staring at the twinkly lights of the ceiling there at Madison Square Garden within 3 minutes, everybody thinks it's a fix because all their smart money was on, yeah, smart money. I got your smart money. You want to know where I keep it? All right, now here's the big news, and I say it's very big news because if it's true, then Britain better act, and they better act fast. I'm telling you right now. Apparently, Iran has seized three British patrol boats, saying that they were within Iran's territorial waters. Now, these kinds of claims are very difficult to verify. You can say that you weren't in their territorial water. They can say that you were, and they got your boat and they got your crew. Unless you got some spy satellite technology that is going to show the boats operating outside of the international or outside of the territorial waters of a country, and then of course they're going to come up with pictures of their own that say that they were. It's very difficult to prove. Iran, it is said, is upset with Britain because they voted against them on some nuclear business. I don't care what it's about. If it was me, and I, you know. You know what I am. I guess I'm the original warmonger. That's me, you know. Because I only see one way of dealing with these people. I mean, we used to negotiate with them. You saw where that got us. We used to sit down and talk with them over a nice hot cup of Turkish tea or whatever the hell it is they drink. And we'd chit-chat into the wee hours of the morning, even take showers together. But those days are over. We know how this part of the world operates. Now, the Iranians have seized some British boats. And I'm telling you right now, if it was me, I'd stick a couple of submarines down there. I'd say, okay, you know that nuclear industry you're so proud of? Well, in about, oh, say 24 hours, we're going to turn it into a glow in the sand, man. It'll be a big glowing patch in the sand if you don't turn those boats over. Because we're going to start arming you know what. You know those babies that come popping right out of the silo there on deck number 3? Yeah, they're going to be coming out of the water, man, just like that chick from Splash. Turn the boats back in, or we sight in those nuclear works, and we turn it into just another hot spot in the sand, baby. Where do you get off taking people? They must be out of their mind. Don't they understand how hot things are down there? Or maybe they'd like a shooting war. Hey, the mood that I'm in. Problem is, nobody else wants to go along with me on any of this stuff, you know? We're all still kind of figuring it out. Although, let me say this. I'm going to tell you right now, the American people, they ain't against Bush. I haven't seen any poll that shows me that they overwhelmingly want Bush out of there. They're not sure. They don't know, man. They're waiting for some sign of success. That's all. They're just waiting to see a big victory parade. Then it's all going to be in Bush's favor. In fact, as bad as things have seemingly been going for Bush, he's not doing too bad in the public opinion polls. One of the reasons is because the guy he's running against is so utterly without a clue, it's sad. It makes you want to drop to one knee and weep into your hands, man, like you just gave up a 75-yard pick going the other way. Like you just fed a gopher pitch to Barry Bonds. Now, John Kerry, though, has got one thing right, and let me tell you what it is. It's about that stem cell research stuff. Now, Kerry said it. He had a couple of scientists to back him up. It's good research. And to allow this sort of foggy ideology that Bush is using to keep from this kind of stuff. You know, like, I don't care, man. I don't have Alzheimer's yet, but someday I will. And then I'll really appreciate having that medicine around, if indeed they can make it out of the stem cells of little tiny babies. I say, what's a few babies when it comes to me churning out more comedy? I don't even think that there's a competition there. But it's a bigger problem, man. Bush, you are hooked up with people like the far right on abortion and on prayer in school and on this stem cell thing and on gay marriage. You're going to sink it, man. And I'm telling you right now, you got a shot. You got a shot. You got a legitimate shot. You can win this thing in November if you keep your face clean, keep your nose clean, and keep your face out of the backsides of these no gay marriage freaks. All those cats that are running those political conventions back in North Carolina with those Gomer Pyle ideas that they got. I mean, you'd think these guys are sitting around the barbershop in Mount Pilot. Get a clue, man. It's going to kill you. I say this simply as a Democrat who I can't, who do I got to vote? I ain't voting for Kerry. Look, man, I was born with half a brain. If you're a Democrat, like me, and you vote for John Kerry, you've decided that your party is more important than the quality of the guy that they've nominated to be president, than the quality of the leader that the man's going to be. That's what you've decided. I don't care what you tell me. Because he has shown nothing, nothing in the way of ideas that are, first of all, they're not that far apart from Bush's on the most vital topics, economy and defense. That's number one. That's big in my book. He's moving toward the center, huh? Yeah. Like you didn't see that one coming. And secondly, I don't trust the guy as far as I can throw him. I mean, first of all, he's asking about Bush, whether he served in the military. What's the story with you and serving your country? I thought you were the big war hero, and then you came back here and threw your medals back and called all the guys that you served with murderers. What's that about? Has anybody even asked him about that? No, of course not, no. So I can't vote for that guy. I'm left with one choice. What, do you want me not to vote or vote for Alfred E. Newman or Mickey Mouse? No, I don't do that. I did it once, and Mickey Mouse didn't win, and I'm not going to waste the vote again. But the thing that's going to murder Bush is not Iraq. People are rather right now split down the middle on Iraq and whether that's a success or not. I think, for the most part, the American people are glad we did what we did. I know I am. What they're worried about is some of the more extreme positions he's going to be taking vis-a-vis things like gay marriage. It's not that it's an overriding concern of the American people. We don't want a Bible-thumping nut in there. That's all. We just don't want that. Gay marriage is one thing. As far as the American people are concerned, I've told you this once and I'll tell you again. The American people think that the gay folks should have their rights. They just don't want their kids to be gay. That's seriously how straight people look at it. I think all gay people should have rights, and, well, you know your own son is gay. Damn it. They want to, you know, it's cool, and they don't want them to get beat up, and they should have all the rights in the world, and they should be able to teach in schools. They even ought to be able to be Boy Scout leaders. It doesn't make any difference to the rank-and-file American. The only thing that they don't want is their own kid to turn into one. Now, that's just the way it is. Is it right? Is it wrong? I don't know. It's human. It's American. And maybe in 50 years it'll be different. But when it comes to that stem cell research crap, figuring out whether or not you're going to have 3 cents worth of brains when you turn 80, or wind up like poor President Reagan, staring into a wall and talking to it and saying, oh, it's nice to meet you, Mr. Gorbachev. You're looking very, what happened to the birthmark? And he thinks he's looking at a birthmark, and it's an 18th century oil painting. You don't want to wind up like that, so that's why everybody's into that stem cell thing. Now, what's the other thing I said? That whole abortion, will you get out of here with that, man? The American people are pro-choice. And they have been for many years. Because they see it as a female issue, and it is a female issue alone, and it is a woman's right to determine what the hell is going to happen and what isn't. And the rest of these cats are kooks, baby, and you can't hook up with them. You want to give it away? Keep pounding that drum, man. You'll give it all over to Kerry, and then he'll be standing there on January 21st, standing at the inauguration with a big wide-eyed look going, you guys want me? What do you want me to do? He's going to throw his arms up and go, huh? Here's John Kerry at the inauguration. Thank you. you know, I was only kidding. You're president. You're kidding, right? No, I'm not freaking kidding. You ran, didn't you? I was your campaign manager. What are you telling me now? I don't want to do this job. I was just doing something to get up the hell out of the Heinz broad's hair. You know, she's always worrying about me, getting in her face, spending too much of her money. I want to get out and get a job. You want to get out and get a job, so you want to run for president, huh? Well, guess what? You got elected, Goofy. Fancy that. Yeah, fancy that. 1-800-4... So just remember that one. Iran has seized some British patrol boats, just like they're all the 800-pound gorilla. Get a load of them. Boy, those turban wrappers in Tehran, man, they bring a pair, don't they? Those cats bring a pair. Okay, Britain, what are you going to do about it? Let's go. Come on. Two subs armed. Not nuclear. No. Two subs sending in some of those, whatever they blast off of those subs. Okay, you bring it back. What's that? You're going to bring back the boats? You're going to do it now 48 hours, we're taking out the whole nuclear industry that you're so ding-dang proud of. Like we didn't think cats that wrap towels knew how to run nuclear power plants. Of course you do, all right?
Well, you treated us with no respect.
Oh, get out of here. Making those freaking towel wrap jokes, man, because Tony Blair thinks they're funny, all right? I think you're a good cat. I think you have good intentions and all of that. But in a minute here, if you don't give me those boats back, you're going to see that towel catch on fire, man. You're going to be a walking torch. Now give me the boats back. We got a whole... Don't you understand that the British got a whole military contingent in that part of the world? So does the United States. And they're not in a very good mood these days. They're in a foul freaking mood. They took out one towel wrapper. They're ready to take another one out. I mean, that's just a word of warning from a friend. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Our mailbag coming up to see how people respond to half of this swill in a moment.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
All right, I got to do the mailbag. Well, let me do the mailbag now. But I saw something. A news analyst made a comment that proves perfectly what I've been talking about in terms of the Middle East oil and our reliance on it. And I'll tell you all about that if I feel like it in just a few minutes. But first, let's check out and see what you guys have been saying in the Phil Hendry Show mailbag at phs@philhendryshow.com. Dear Phil, one person on your last Thursday show said in the mail, su aficionada agradecida. It means you're affectionate and thankful listeners. Santiago. I think I said at the time when I read that it meant, what, there's hair in your nose or something like that?
You said it was the F word in Spanish.
Oh, it's the F word. No, I didn't. Bud did. Hi, Phil. I'm a backstage past listener, so please hear me out. The problem with the Iraq war and how we got into Iraq is that it is hugely divisive. Okay. Bush didn't get America into the war in a manner which most Americans can feel unabashed pride about, where we should feel a sense of righteous fury taking revenge on those who attacked us. Instead, we were left in a murky no-man's land of moral equivalencies, ambiguous enemy assignment, and languishing in this long, frustrating, confused, and energy-draining national debate. Respectfully, Jeff, Larkspur, California. I'm totally clear on it. What are you not clear about, dude? I'd be happy to help you with it. Dear Phil, one of the greatest lines on your show had you, Bud, and Frodo the puppet when you said, great, I'm here between a retard and a puppet. I got some funny looks from people at work. I was laughing so hard. Keep up the great work. You're better than CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News combined. Barry, loyal in Wichita, Kansas. Hi, Phil. Greetings from the vast desert expanse that is the Middle East. I've been here with the U.S. Army in Operation Iraqi Freedom for 4 months, and we've reached a critical mass of Phil withdrawal. I spoke with a friend yesterday who said you've been real supportive of those of us over here, and I can't say how much I appreciate it. I always knew you were a man of great common sense, but standing by your country in a time like this is essential, and you're a true patriot. I'm looking forward to a year from now when I'm back in L.A. and listening to you every night. This is from the front lines of freedom, Sergeant Christopher Missick. He's with the 319th Signal... something or other. BN? Signal bin. He's with the signal bin. They keep all the signals in a big bin. P.S. I think you'll have a bunch of new soldiers listening when we get back after all the stories I've told about your show. I think you've got some eager new listeners. Let me just say this, Sergeant. I think I can say it now. We're in production of 1,000 Phil Hendry Show CDs that we're sending to the men and women in Iraq. I realize it's not that many, but the production cost, I'm picking up the cost of this, and I know I'm wealthy, but you know, forget it, man. I'm not that rich. So, in any event, we are producing 1,000 Phil Hendry Show CDs that we're going to be laying on our men and women over there in Iraq as soon as we get them produced, and as soon as we hook up with the appropriate military people that can help us transport them over there. And I know some people in the Marine Corps, and do you know that the Marines have like what do they call it? It's an officer in charge of morale. It's like a morale officer. He's like the guy who's in charge of puppet shows and ice cream socials and stuff. The guys come back after a long, hard day out in the front. They, okay, what's up? Well, you know, what's for kicks? And he, like, busts out a case of beer, whatever the hell they need. But they got an officer that does that stuff, so maybe he'll help us. Hi, Phil. As an American citizen, I'm filled with rage, not terror, over the murder of my fellow American, Paul Johnson. Do you remember that in the 80s, Warner Brothers, in an act of political correctness, pulled any cartoon which made any reference to a Saudi person as a sheet-wearing predator with a long knife in his teeth? I guess the truth hurts. A backstage pass holder from the first day, Mike Patterson, Phoenix. Remember those cartoons when we were kids? They'd have the Saudi guy, the sheet wearer, just crawling over the hills. So what's wrong with that? It was a guy. It was a bad guy. It wasn't a good guy. It wasn't a good Saudi person. The good Saudi people were in the bazaar selling all the Western products. Hi, Phil. One of my favorite bits you did was during a freeway chase that was actually occurring on TV. It was back in 1999. You did the voice of the guy in the truck being chased. He sounded like a rather challenged black man that called you to ask if he could make the red lights go green, and he also wanted a Snickers bar. As the chase continued, we hear the driver saying to you that all he wants is some Matrix tickets. It was awesome. I was listening to Phil and watching the Channel 9 broadcast, and Phil was too because he was doing the play-by-play, hands down the funniest bit, Don. Let me tell you a true story about that, Don. There was a freeway chase going on, and we were watching it on TV, so I decided that I would do the audio, and I had the voice of the guy. Well, the next thing you know, Channel 9 calls our newsroom at KFI and says, "We hear you are in contact with the driver. Can we get him on the air, please?" And do you know that the numbskull, and I say that with the greatest of respect, working in our newsroom at that time said, "Oh, it's only Phil, and he's kidding." I said, "Why did you do that?" He goes, "Well, I mean, I said, they're a competing news agency. They're a competitor. A competitor. A competitor reporter. You idiot." And then I kissed him full on the mouth and went back to work. Phil Henry Show will be back. 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Dean Wheeler is part of a Northern California group called, I don't know, Sissies Who Are Afraid All the Time. I don't know what it's called, but he was on our show. I know, he's against the war in Iraq, and he thinks Al-Qaeda has finally won with the terrible murder of Paul Johnson. He says, that's it, let's give up. They've won, and he wants to hand over as a peace offering one of the cross believers, a Christian leader. He wants to hand over either Benny Hinn, Jan Crouch, or Billy Graham. Their heads on a platter, as it were.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
You say you speak for America and you've lost your Christianity because of what the Al-Qaeda is doing?
Well, I mean, how can I remain Christian when those guys are Muslims and they've got a guy's head walking around with it on a popsicle stick?
Dean, you have to have your faith. Have to keep your faith strong in God.
All right,
because
let me ask
God
you.
Is going to come through.
Well, that's why I'm
Our
saying.
Our country's strong. You can't lose your.
That's why I'm saying if we could send Jan Crouch or Rexella Van Impey over there, if they're
and
Christian.
This is not, excuse me, I'm sorry, this is not Benny Hinn's fault.
No, I know it's not Mr. Hinn's fault, but I'm saying Benny Hinn is the whole, when they began broadcasting American Evangelist Television to the Middle East, one of they had literally demonstrated, the day after the Rexella Van Impey show, there were Shiites in the street trying to peel their own skin off.
This is not...
As the result of Rexella who?
Rexella Van Impey, she is a prominent evangelist, and they took one look at her and they wanted to tear their eyeballs out. Now, if the Christian faith is strong, we can send Rexella over there, and she'll come back with nothing worse than perhaps a ruffled, you know, maybe her dress is askew. But if it isn't...
I'm sorry.
That is not because of the Christian faith. If something like this makes you lose your faith, what do you imagine it's going to be like in hell?
I don't believe in hell. I believe in relative...
Hell is there.
Well,
hell
ma'am,
is there.
I don't think you have any proof of that any more than I have proof that it doesn't exist. But
read the Bible.
The Bible is not proof. It is simply words. Now, Tanya, the Al-Qaeda may not have known a lot about the Christian faith if these evangelists had not been on TV. They have to take responsibility in a way. Why were you over there, you Christians, telling the Muslims to believe in Jesus when you knew they'd turn Benny Hinn's suit blood red?
Benny Hinn.
What is it with Benny Hinn? I mean,
what is it?
I'm using
the one that said you want Benny. You would rather see Benny Hinn's head on a stick.
No, ma'am, I did not say that.
Oh, yes, you did.
Oh, yes, you did say that.
No, I don't recall.
That's why I called in.
What did
you
I say?
Said it.
What did I say?
You would rather see Benny Hinn's head on a stick.
No, what I meant was, what would you? I was asking a rhetorical question. I asked the lady, what would you rather see, peace in our time or Benny Hinn's beautiful white suit turned tomato soup red by the blood from his...
Okay, we get the idea.
Right, I wouldn't sacrifice Benny Hinn to have peace.
Oh.
That's not our choice.
Oh, my God, are you kidding me?
That's not our decision.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
You wouldn't sacrifice Benny Hinn?
Well, you can't give up one man. You give up one man, you lose the world.
Oh, you heard that shitless
list,
you jackass.
God gave up one man already.
Well,
his son for our sin.
Well, I know you believe that. I know you believe all of that mumbo jumbo, but the fact is,
it's not mumbo jumbo.
Well, I practiced it, and what did it get me? I'm looking at a guy's head hanging off at the end of a popsicle stick.
Do you know the guy?
Who?
Who? The guy's head on a popsicle stick.
Ma'am, I would rather see Benny Hinn go over and take his chances with Al Qaeda than go to kiss my wife goodnight and she's got no head on.
Well. You know
okay,
what?
So you think about that the next time you lean over to kiss your husband, and there's no head to kiss.
The guy's there.
Yeah, you are freaking out.
That's not your wife. I mean, you're freaking out over this one guy. Why? I don't understand. You know?
Why is everything with you? Why, guy? What about why, guy? What school did you go to?
Why?
Yes, there you go. That's how you say the word. You're going, why, guy.
I am from Tennessee.
Look up there. It's the sky. The ska is music from Jamaica. It's not what's over your head.
Will you knock it off with how the lady's talking? I'm talking to you, and she's talking to you, about your insane proposal to send Rexella Van Impey over there. And if she keeps her head...
Well, Mr. Hendry, I'm telling you right now, one broadcast, the Jack Van Impey show over there on a Thursday night, there were Shiites in the street trying to have sex with goats.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
I love that. I love that. Now, didn't he also say, excuse me, at some point, I forget, there was a reference made, Rexella Van Impey's head. You guys know who Rexella Van Impey is? I don't know, I just picked her name, because it's such a cool name, Rexella Van Impey. And her husband's, I mean no harm to any of you, if Rexella's listening, and I know she does regularly, please, you know I would never mean any harm befall you. You know what you mean to me. I don't think I need to go any further than that. But he was talking to... Oh, we got the line in there about having sex with goats. Oh, great. I sound like my wife now. That's when Maria laughs. She goes... Oh, look. Honey, that's funny. Mommy sounds like a pig. And the kids all go... Mommy. And then she'll put her hand over her mouth and she'll go... You sound like a pig again, Mommy. So here, I'm a stepdad. My kids gave me a pretty good stepfather's day yesterday. I got a stepfather's day. You ready for that one? They gave me a present. They baked a cake, and we had steaks on the grill. Of course, I was the guy that had to cook them. I got a comedy collection from my kids on DVD. I love Jackie Gleason, and I love Laurel and Hardy. And I love, there's a few things that I've told, I've got the whole Monty Python, but the kids brought me a comedy collection of, it had a Laurel and Hardy movie in it, but then it had the Three Stooges. Now, I was never really partial, and I know that there's a lot of people that dig the Three Stooges. I'm not a huge fan of their stuff, because, I don't know. It was like all about, with Laurel and Hardy, the slapstick was sort of a byproduct of the other stupid stuff they were doing. With these guys, it was all about beating each other up with hand mixers and large mallets. Why, you? And then he'd, like, pull the hair out of the guy's nose or something. And how many times can you get hit in the eyes without getting, like, glaucoma by the time you're 40? God, just, oh, yeah? You see these? Boink! Ah! And the guy sounded like he really took it in the face. Like he took one off the chin. And then they gave me a Martin and Lewis movie. What's that about? No, thank you. I mean, Jerry Lewis, yeah. Martin and Lewis, no. And then Abbott and Costello, like, they used to have a TV show when I was a kid. I'd watch that. But other than that, little fat guy used to drive me nuts. I wanted to beat him up. The little Lou Costello guy? Some of the stuff was okay, especially the way Bud used to slap him. I loved that. Every time Bud would slap him across the face, but the rest of it, when he would get apoplectic when he'd see an animal or a chick with great-looking legs or something, he suddenly couldn't breathe. Yeah, the whole thing. But anyway, the kids gave me those. I got two pairs of boxer shorts from Val Surf, really cool-looking boxer shorts that say Greatest Dad on them. Then I got a bottle of Tesoro Paradiso that my wife gave me. However, it was leaking. I said, what the hell? $110 a bottle, it's leaking. She goes, you're kidding me, where? I said, right here, see, the box is soft. That means there's been some moisture there. Oh, that's just some water. When's the last time water smelled like $110 tequila? Smell it. Sure enough, it was soaked with Paradiso. Then I pulled the bottle out of the thing, and it was down about a snifter. Now, either my kids had gotten into it, my wife was taking a taste, or somebody at the market was taking a taste that was selling it, or it's got a leak. And then what else? Oh, then we cooked up some steaks. I got a whole new way of cooking. See, I don't want to bore you with, but, you know, I'm just going to tell you because I don't give a crap. I go out to my barbecue. I have my beer, and I got my spatula and my fork, and I don't want to be bothered. Now, you can come out and bring me more to drink. You can come out, as my lovely wife does occasionally, and says, Margarita, honey? Why, certainly, dear. But out there, that's my territory, and I want to stand there and just enjoy the evening sky. What I don't want is for what my wife often does, her walking over and saying, you know, my father likes to... This is my barbecue here. Well, here's how my dad does... I don't care how your dad does it. You know, my dad puts a drip... That's the thing, you know. Especially before we got the gas grill and we had the little, what's it called, man? The old tub, huh? Not the hibachis. You remember the old kettle grills? What the hell are they called, man? They were a fantastic grill. Was it a Kenmore? They're like the old-fashioned kettle jobs when you put the coal in the bottom. We had those back in our early days of our marriage. She'd come out. Now, what my dad does is he separates the coal. Do I look like your father? No, but you know, I really trust the way... What she's really saying is this. You know, I really would much rather have my father here doing this because he knows exactly how to barbecue, and you're just some retard that I picked up to marry. So if you wouldn't mind, back away, I'll phone my dad, and I'll get all the instructions on how to barbecue a hamburger. Are you nuts? Anyway, I got my gas grill out there, man, and I did a porterhouse and 5 strip steaks. Oh, baby. This thing, I'm telling you right now, you got a barbecue, get a gas freaking grill, Jim. Not because coal is necessarily a bad... Weber, thank you very much, Mark. Those great old Weber grills. They're okay. You don't want to use that freaking lighter fluid with that crap. But I got a big Lynx grill. I threw a porterhouse on there. And here, I got a whole new thing now. I'm doing indirect heat. That's the new hip thing. You know about that with the barbecuing? Indirect heat, baby. In other words, what you do is you put the steaks over, say, 2 of the burners that are not lit. Then you light the burners on the other side. So it is cooking the steaks. Now, what I do is I'll sear it and...
So where are you, Jeff Perdome on the TV?
Who's Jeff Perdome?
The man...
You mean Chef Perdome?
No, his name's Jeff.
It's Chef, you jackass. Anyway, you put the steaks, you sear the hell out of that baby, then you flip them over on the other side and you put them on that indirect heat. Oh, man, did I cook up some steaks last night. And I'm looking at the kids, and I had to turn them on to, like, rare steak. Because to them, they're like most kids that grow up in a sort of, oh, I don't want to say, you know, cloistered environment, but, you know, they're not outdoorsy or anything.
What's this?
That's a barbecue, and, you know, we cook meat on it. It's going to be okay. Don't worry. You won't be poisoned.
Well, I've never seen anything like it.
Just don't worry about it, man. So I cooked this baby up, and the first time they saw a rare steak, ew, it's red, and it, yeah, that's good meat. Go ahead, put it in the microwave, cook it until it's like shoe leather. Go on. Mommy, can we zap it? That's what Maria, yeah, zap it in the microwave. So take that oh, I don't know, let's say $8 New York strip steak and turn it into a catcher's mitt. Go right ahead. They bring it back out of there. Well, after years of this, they finally have come to appreciate the fantastic way that I do a damn porterhouse and steak, man. I do a medium rare steak. It kicks ass. I put a little bit of that. I don't care. I go to the store. I don't do the barbecue sauce thing ordinarily, but I did find some steak salt. Now, what you wanted, you want to get that garlic salt and onion salt. Oh, onion is no good on steak. Forget that. But garlic. Anything named Bubba, Buddy, anything with a black guy's face on it, buy it. Buy it, because I'm guaranteeing it's better than anything else. It beat the hell out of that A1 steak sauce. Anything with some black cat on the front, you know, like, hi, I'm Ray Dean. And it'll say, like, Ray Dean's death sauce. Man, I'm there. I am there. And then you get the big thing, unscrew that, and I kind of, then you want to marinate it. Maybe you want to marinate it, maybe not. I'm not really into that marinade bull crap. Why do you want to ruin a good steak with salsa and beer? That's what you do when you've got a piece of round steak that you know is going to taste like the inside of a dead cow anyway. You might as well try to tenderize the thing, you know, while you're still alive, while we're still young. So you can marinate it. But I get the good steak, man. Nah, wait. Put a little bit of salt on it. Put it on a grill. Next thing you know, you're in heaven, Jim. But that's the key. Get any steak sauce that has the name of somebody that sounds like he just got out of a bunkhouse hungover, okay? Red's Barbecue Hell. Red or Butch. Some dude that sounds like, you know, he was in town, got drunk, beat up a showgirl, and he's got to get back out to the drive because they're heading down the trail to Sedalia, you know? Something like Sparky, like who? Any of those guys on Rawhide. If it says Clint Eastwood's, buy it. 1-800-449-8686. So there you go. That's the whole thing on barbecue. Don't forget that Tesoro Paradiso. And what the hell else do we do this weekend? I ate a whole lot of ice cream thanks to Rick Dees. Thanks a lot, Rick. You pulled me right off of my quarter slim, man. I got to get right back on it tomorrow morning. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Well, I forgot to mention, Mark had a visit from the meat man the other day. He fell for it. Yeah, the guy that comes around to your house and goes, I got the steaks you ordered. I didn't order any steaks. Oh, come on, pal, I got them right here. Yeah, huh? Oh, they do that all the time, man. Or here's the other one. This is the one that everybody knows. Look, a guy ordered $3,000 worth of steak, and he's not home, man. I got to offload this stuff, or I'm going to be fired for sure. Would you mind buying about $2,950 worth? Not at all. Thank you. Anyway, how much did you buy? $140 worth of steaks? Mark's like living with his wife and his new baby. He's got a refrigerator about the size of an igloo cooler, and this guy crams like $50 million worth of meat into it, if you'll pardon the expression. Anyway, you'll be barbecuing your ass off here for a while. What did he give you, hamburger meat? No, did you get some good stuff? Did you get some big porterhouses and all of that bacon-wrapped? Bacon-wrapped? Wow. Those guys that come down, have they done it to you yet, Janice? Oh, they come down the street with their meat wagon. And, of course, a young lady these days can't be too careful of a guy coming down the street with his meat wagon. But, you know, I know you're a big steak eater, so anyway, they'll come down and they'll knock on the door and they'll say, look, you got to help me out. The guy here, he ordered, as soon as he said, guy did that to me and I told him to get lost. And I felt kind of bad because he turned around and he just walked away with his head slumped down and his shoulders down with tears streaming down his face. And then he got into the cab of his truck and I heard a muffled pistol shot and I wasn't quite sure, but it's none of my concern. But you guys with that whole meat racket, why don't you take your meat and stick it? Now, the thing that Mark's telling me now is the guy that sold him the meat was hidden in his car? The meat was hidden? What was hidden in the car? Don't buy meat from a guy that hides it, man. Don't ever do that. Dude's coming down the street with a... Look, can we talk? Sure. I've got about $200 worth of station in my glove box. If you'd really wouldn't mind buying it. What was he hiding in his car, man? Oh, his kid was in his car. I thought you said he hid it in his car. Well, that's the show. I had about 9 more things I wanted to do. Guess I'll have to do them tomorrow night or not, as the case may be. Our number, 1-800-449-8686. If you'd like to call and hear the thing just keep on ringing, which some retards actually do. They actually call after the show is done, and we'll just stand here for kicks and watch the line keep ringing. We'll also have tomorrow more fun with our characters. And what else? Oh, yeah, email phs@philhenryshow.com.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.